Welcome to the Basketball Index Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor, saying hello for Krishna and Tim. So what we did is we recorded this giant Basketball Index power rankings all at once, and it ended up being like 4 hours. So we had to cut it into three pieces to make it manageable to listen to. We're going to talk about teams 11 through 20 today. We're going to start from 20 and then work our way to the better teams. Since this is already pre-recorded, I'm just going to drop you into the middle of the conversation, and away we go. Let's talk about Minnesota. We have them as the 20th ranked team. They obviously make the huge trade for Rudy Gobert. I didn't realize this at the time, where they've had some struggles. There's so much to talk about. They're probably the easiest. We could do a whole podcast, right? Where like Kat got really sick, lost a ton of weight coming into the season. They have to try to fit Rudy Gobert in. They trade away Vanderbilt, which was kind of like the heart and soul of their team. Really good defensive player. They also trade away Pat Bev, who was a good defensive player. Also a lot of heart there. Some edge there. So like they traded away their glue guys, which I think has been kind of difficult. And also there isn't a ton of 3-point shooting on this team, as well as trying to mix, you know, your two centers and try to see Ant develop. So there's a lot of things going on with Minnesota.
Yeah, I had higher hopes for them going into the year. I saw a lot of encouraging things from their coaching staff last season. Schematically, I thought, you know, sticking Kat and Gobert together would make for an interesting combo because they've got the spacing between the two that enables you to play them together. And then you've got better shot blocking. So Kat doesn't need to be your anchor big. He's been used as an anchor big this year, though. I think you've covered the weak points well. This is an interesting group because it's like, they've got some of the super versatile guys. They've got the elite rim protector. They've got some offensive on-ball, really good players with Ant and Kat. So I don't know. They should be better than this. And they've been one of the more disappointing teams of the year, I'd have to say so far.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. One interesting stat that is they're generating the 10th highest, 10th best shot quality, which was surprising to me because it feels like on both ends, they've been a disappointment, both on offense and defense. And actually, I mentioned at the beginning of the pod that I had done tiers in terms of what my expectations were to start this season and then updating them now. And I kind of really believed in Minnesota's a conference finals contender, I guess I should say, or maybe a second round team. And right now, honestly, to me, it feels like they've jumped down a tier or two in terms of what my expectations are for them. I think that's how big of a disappointment they've been. The fact that they're at 20th. If you had said that before the season, we would have been wondering, have there been a ton of injuries? I mean, obviously Kat's injured now, but for the most part, I think they've been fairly healthy. Compared to a lot of the other teams here.
And so, they've had the second easiest strength of schedule in the NBA.
Right. Yeah. So combine that with the second easiest strength of schedule. So for them to be this low is I think you have to kind of just totally change your expectations for what the team's going to end up with. And so if we're talking about expectations now, are you do you guys feel like they're now more of a playing caliber team, or do you feel like they could still crack that top six, or kind of where are you guys with them?
I think that with the Kat injury, I think a lot of things are actually going to fall into play. So there's multiple things to this, right? So if you go back, I did a Kat player profile podcast kind of slash scouting report. You can go back, you can find that. And he is an unbelievably devastating offensive player. I don't think people realize how devastating he is from a volume and efficiency standpoint. But on the other end, he is so bad defensively, whether it's looking at the advanced numbers or just watching the tape. It is unbelievable kind of the duality there, where he's one of the top offensive players, but he is so bad as a defensive center that there's no possible way you could win a championship in my eyes with him there. So I know people are frustrated about the Gobert trade because it hasn't worked out, but I didn't really see, like, you had to make a change there because it was never going to work defensively. That being said, they do need to figure out, I actually do think they're going to rattle off some wins here, just because instead of like, because I mean, the season is for a team this talented of like, hey, we just need to figure out how to make the pieces work together. And that is true. But I think with Cat going down, they're going to get out of that mode. There's going to be Kyle Anderson on the floor more, really good glue guy. And I think things are going to be more straightforward for Minnesota. So I just think they're going to play well in this stretch while Cat is gone, as crazy as that might sound. But playoffs wise, it's a real mixed bag right now. And I think I just need a month or two to like let this sort itself out, because it is very hazy when I look over there trying to figure out what's going on. Tim, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I don't know exactly how long Cat's out. I don't know if you have that answer,
like,
but the next like,
or 6 weeks.
Okay. Because the next like 3 weeks for them are somewhat manageable from a scheduling standpoint, but then at the end of December into January, it gets a bit tougher. So they still have time to figure it out. Right now, they're like, from a standing standpoint, they're 11-11. They're ninth in the West. They're, I mean, tied with 11, like the 7 through 11 teams all have 11 losses. So they're right firmly in that play-in range, to the point where if they, you know, clicked and figured it out tomorrow, they'd be fine. It's only a game or two out of being out of the play-in, but we haven't seen the pieces come together yet. And with Cap being out, it's challenging to anticipate those pieces will fall into place. So I don't know, man. The schedule's already been pretty easy. It has to pick up at some point here. And if they don't figure it out in the next 3 weeks, and I don't know if they can with Cat out, I am ready to really adjust expectations as to where this team could potentially go. If they get healthy later in the year and they do figure it out, they become a dangerous team that you don't want to play in the playoffs. But even once you get to that setup, you know, Cat has the deficiencies you talked about. Gobert has, you know, you have concerns with him potentially from a mobility standpoint. Like there are things that you can point to and say, not as worried about them in the playoffs as I otherwise would be if they were styled differently. But I don't know. They're going to be a team I keep an eye on because there's still potential here, but we just haven't seen it happen yet.
I think the thing that's been a little disappointing in terms of like, it's just like their record and where they are. Cause to me, they always were going to be more likely to be a better regular season team. And that would kind of lead into their playoffs, kind of like potentially doing a little better in the playoffs because they get a high seed. Right. Mm-hmm. But like starting out this slow and being mostly healthy, facing the second easiest schedule, it just kind of leaves you wondering, it's going to be a lot harder for them. Like, we're talking about them competing for the play-in now. I don't think...
We have them ranked 11th in the West.
Okay, we had them ranked
collectively, 11th. The three of us. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, no, no.
In the West.
Okay. No, I was just thinking preseason. I believe our preseason, I'll have to look this up, but I believe our preseason projections had them much higher than that. Let me pull this up, but I want to say they were like what, top five or something.
While you pull that up, I think so. I feel like I need to say there needs to be a little bit of a conversion for Tim, because Tim is the most measured person I think I've ever met. He also is very positive. So when he says that he has to adjust his expectations, I never want to hear that out of Tim when he's talking to me.
Yeah, we had them, LeBron had them picked to be third in the West, and then the BBIPM projections had them, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So that was a bit closer.
Yeah. So just like based on those LeBron projections, it already feels like it's unlikely they're going to be top three. Let's just say that.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll leave it there. Portland, we're looking at the 19th spot here on our power rankings. Portland, for me, all I can say is they are a lot better than they were, which I guess is a really successful offseason. Jeremy Grant is playing extremely well. And for me, Simons, I feel like I was a little worried, right? Because he only had that like real great second half of the season. Has always been a good shooter, but really turned it on. He got a huge contract. I know they kind of had to do that with Dame's timeline, but he seems to be a really electric player. For me, though, the biggest fear is you have Simons, you have Dame, and you sort of have a similar problem when you had CJ, where it's like, well, we have two guards that can score, which is great, but we have two guards that they're going to play a ton, and they're both not great at defense. I know they've tried to help that with more defensive-oriented wings, but I feel like the structure of the team has a ceiling built into it. Tim, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so we're seeing a worse version of them than we will, because Dame has missed a bunch of time. We've seen Josh Hart, one of those wings they brought in, miss some time. They've played, Krishna, correct me if I'm wrong, the hardest strength of schedule of any team this year, substantially harder than a lot of these other teams that we've talked about. Their schedule will lighten up here in a bit. Hopefully Dame's back. Well, is he back right now? I don't know if he's back at the moment. I know he wasn't against the Lakers like a day or two ago, but once he gets back, once the schedule lightens up, they're going to be able to string some wins together, because they have some solid players between Dame, Grant, Simons, and then you've got your Winslow, Hart, Nurkic. Like they've got a decent group together. I don't think they have a super high ceiling, but I think in this, you know, we've got the Clippers, Brooklyn, Miami, Portland, Minnesota, Lakers kind of in this kind of cluster over here, Atlanta. They can be better than some of these teams when healthy. So I could see them being a riser potentially next time we check in.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So just kind of looking at the Blazers' shot quality numbers, they're not too great on either end. They're 26th in offensive shot quality, and they are 25th in defensive shot quality. But as Tim mentioned, they play the hardest schedule, and they're not only missing Dame, but they have not had Gary Payton the second the entire season, and that's going to be a big addition. He's going to help a ton.
He was off my radar just because he hasn't played. So they've got reinforcements on the way. There's a better team on this roster than we've seen on the court so far.
So he's definitely going to help defensively. He was on our all defensive team here at Basketball Index. He's fantastic. But the only problem, again, is in crunch time for big stretches of the game, what my problem is Dame and Simons are both going to be on the floor. I guess you could just run a three-guard lineup because Gary Payton is such a good defender. But do you see what I'm saying? There's like a bit of a logjam there in terms of getting defense onto the floor.
Yeah, they don't have the best defensive center. They've added the wings, but the guard defense outside of Payton, who offensively doesn't play like a guard, is certainly very poor. So there are limitations in that way. I think certainly Simons and Dame, the impact, the magnitude of impact they have offensively will overcome a lot of the defense potentially. But yeah, there's still, I'd say, fundamental flaws. They've attempted to address those with the wing defense, and until Payton comes back, I don't know that we can say we know exactly how it's going to look. Maybe they run out lineups where they have like Grant, Winslow, Payton, and then Dame and Simons, and they have scoring punch. They've got, you know, a wing scorer. They're playing smaller, but they've got a lot of wing defense that can fly around, maybe be extra active and help and recover. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but they've got some time to figure it out, I think. And once they get their team healthy, then I think we can get a better sense of if there is that upside with this group or not.
I also kind of like Eubanks as a backup center, getting out there for like 15, 20 minutes, just kind of like his game.
Yeah, I believe he had the highest coverage versatility in the league so far this year.
Yep. Yeah, he was way up there.
He also has a pretty good haircut, which I noticed. But yeah, let's move on to Brooklyn. We have Brooklyn at 17. This is the one we probably
Miami at 18.
You skipped Miami.
Miami. Oh, you moved the highlighter thing. It threw me off. Miami at 18. This team is really difficult because they've just been so injured. Like there was a game where they had seven active players. Kyle Lowry had a triple double because he was out there for like 58 minutes. I think Miami is really good. I don't know if they're as good as last year, but also I have no idea because all of their players have been hurt.
Yeah, they've missed Butler. They've missed Hero. They've played a harder strength of schedule. Let me see. Third hardest, it looks like. So there's certainly some factors going against them. Hero's really talented guy. Lowry, if they're, you know, able to limit how much they're trying to make him run around and move defensively, offensively, can still give you some playmaking, some shooting. They've got some interesting pieces. Butler, when healthy, is a really nice player for them. Bam is someone that you anticipate having more of an impact in a playoff environment than a regular season environment, potentially. I think Caleb Martin's been a nice addition for them. Gabe Vincent has played decently for them. So they've got some dudes on this team. Once they get healthy, the schedule lightens up, we're going to see them roll a bit more. I'm interested to hear Christian's thoughts, though, because he ranked them 13th. Taylor, you had them 19th, and I had them 20th. So, Krishna, what are you seeing with this group that has you higher than, you know, the Pacers, Atlanta, the Clippers, Brooklyn, Portland, Utah? What has you with these guys all that much higher than Taylor and I do?
Yeah, so I think what ended up happening on my end is because they're so injured, and like it basically feels like they played pretty well for how badly they've been injured, if that makes sense, which is, given the schedule and how badly they've been injured. And I think they had some, let me pull this up. I believe they had some good indicators in terms of their shot quality. They're pretty good on, in terms of like the opponent shot quality. They're doing a good job into forcing teams into tougher shots. Yeah, let me pull that up, exactly what that was. They're 11th. And then just like they played a really brutal schedule. And I think part of my ranking here was just like, it was looking forward where I am not as worried about them like going forward. But like, if I'm just looking at how they've played so far this year, I probably should have had them lower, to be honest. This is one of those rankings, I think, where I let my preseason expectations and, you know, all the injuries and the hard schedule go like affect my ranking and just kind of rank them much higher than probably the way they've actually played so far in terms of like their net rating and their record and stuff like that. Like they don't have a good record. They don't have a good net rating, but then as you know, we've mentioned, there's like all these caveats where injuries, third hardest schedule. So I think for me, it was just kind of, yeah, probably being a bit too kind to what they've done so far and instead looking a little more forward as to where I expect them to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, that's why the framing for this this exercise is so important. And this is our good, you know, this is our first one doing this. We'll calibrate and moving forward. You know, I think all three of us kind of had slightly different framings with our lists, but you know, collectively, I still think overall it gives us a really nice look. Miami definitely can play.
I'm going to also admit something. I think part of my ranking might have been a bit skewed by seeing them play Boston the other day without Jimmy and kind of being competitive with Boston. We'll get to Boston later, but that, you know, just having that in my mind, maybe also affected my ranking without even realizing it, I guess.
Yeah, I think Miami has the best shot. So we have them at 18 right now. I think they probably have the best shot to be in the top 10 of any team in the bottom half of the league here, just because, like we said, they're going to get healthier. Jimmy Butler's going to get back. They're a good team. They have a good coach. They have good depth. I think it's just one of those things. You give them a month or two to kind of get everything settled in, and I think they're going to skyrocket up the power rankings as well as the traditional win-loss standings. Anybody got anything else before we move on to Brooklyn?
Nope.
All right. So
I'm good.
We got Brooklyn at 17. This is another one we disagreed on heavily. Basically, my beef comes down. I think I said this in the preseason, where it's like, this isn't a team. This is a bunch of coworkers. And that is difficult in a team-based game. Tim, you had them, I had them at 21. Tim, you had them much higher at 13. Krishna at 15. So, Tim, what were your thoughts there on the high ranking?
I didn't weigh the vibes as heavily, I guess. They've been a little bit hot recently. It's 6-4 in their last 10. They've won 3 in a row. When they're healthy and they've got the group out there, they've got some nice pieces. Royce O'Neal does what he does. KD, Kyrie, Joe Harris. Like, there are a lot of good names on here. It's just about getting them to play well together as a team. I think Ben Simmons has been playing better recently. Claxton has had to take a step up from a responsibility standpoint. I'm not as out on the group as you are. I still agree that there may be some potential like chemistry issues or, you know, whatnot. They've made the coaching change. Having watched them play the Lakers, I haven't watched them play all that much since then, but I remember watching them play the Lakers. I was like, this team has no freaking clue what they're doing defensively. The game plan made zero sense. It was like they hadn't scouted LA. Hopefully that's improved. That was right after they had made the coaching change. Hopefully they've got a better grasp on that at this point. But I can see this team, you know, crumbling, burning, and falling apart. But how they've played so far, I think, is better than, you know, kind of us waiting for them to fall apart.
Were they on a back-to-back in with that Lakers game? Weren't they against the Clippers the night before?
They might have been. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I do just kind of wonder if that sometimes, like, you know, having a game the day before maybe affects, like, your preparation. I mean, I know there's, like, advanced scouting, but just, you know, like, we know teams are worse on back-to-backs, right? So, I don't know.
And I can confirm that was a back-to-back. Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Maybe some leeway there. I should give them.
And just to add a few stats on the Nets, their defensive shot quality is actually interestingly pretty good. They are, let's see, pulling this up. They are 8th in defensive shot quality overall. And they've also been like one of the more unlucky teams in the league in terms of opponent 3-point shooting percentage. So I would expect their defense would actually get a little bit better, which is honestly pretty surprising to me because I shouldn't say they don't have the roster, but it seems like the guys they're going to play are not as good defensively, like your Seth Curry's, Patty Mills, and they play a lot of guards together when they're fully healthy. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of curious, but they've had a decent amount of injuries, which is I think allowed them to play some better defensive players more. And Simmons,
exactly,
Simmons has been looking a little better recently too.
Yep. Claxton and Royce O'Neal are higher from a minute standpoint for this team than I think they potentially otherwise would be if they were a little bit healthier with some other guys. Shout out Claxton, 98th percentile block rate, 94th percentile rim contest rate, 96th percentile block rate on contests. A third of his contests are blocks, and opponents are shooting 10% worse at the rim when he is defending them than expected. He's also deterring shots at the rim pretty well. So he has been a nice singular force around the rim and taken a step up in that regard. And if he doesn't, this team won't be that good defensively. So that's been a really key piece for them that has fallen into place. And he's added a lot of good value in that regard. So him and then O'Neal on the perimeter, that I think has really helped him out. And Ben Simmons is 6th on this team from a minute standpoint. If he were a little bit higher, you see some additional strong defense added into the mix. That plus the unluckiness on threes defensively, like I think there's even some room for growth with this group.
The only thing I kind of wonder about them is like, I think, so Seth's missed some games. I think Patty Mills maybe missed some games. So, and Joe Harris. So like, once they have Seth, Patty Mills, Joe Harris, they've tended to play all three of those guys a bit more. I think maybe not Patty Mills as much. So I just kind of wonder what their rotation is going to ultimately look like, and if Royce is going to get more minutes. Like obviously, currently he's really high on the team in minutes, but you know, kind of will that hold? I guess if they have Harris and Seth and.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Also, Ben Simmons got back surgery in the offseason. I feel like that's sometimes lost in the shuffle of all the news with him. And like, it's going to take some time for a guy who's like, what, like 6'10", 6'11", with special movement skills to like get back to moving around. He might have lost a little bit of it in that back surgery, but just even that, just working back from that serious of an injury takes some time. So I feel like people got to give that guy more than like 6 weeks.
I just want to point out now that you had mentioned it before, but my Basketball Index podcast bingo card is almost, I almost have five in a row. I'm just waiting for Taylor to say analytics darling. And then I think I'm there now that he's talked about backs yet again.
The two, I like the like three of the things on the bingo sheet are just Taylor bringing up backs. Yeah, let's move on. We're going to get to the Clippers at 16. Hold on. Do we need to take time to talk about the Clippers other than like they have a lot of good surrounding pieces and like their stars just haven't been healthy? Is there a take beyond that?
John Wall's been good.
Oh, okay.
Zubats.
He had that crazy game.
Some nice games. They're looking to add a big man.
All right.
I feel like
they're looking to add some big man. Oh. Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, he's been really good. They are still looking to add another big to this group, so look for them on the trade market. Miles Turner could be a potentially interesting name. I don't know who they would start in that situation. Probably Zoo as the incumbent, but yeah, they're looking to add. They've got a ton of versatile pieces. This was another one of those like super, 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 super deep teams that like Covington's barely played. Kawhi hasn't really played. Like they're, if they get Kawhi back and then Covington's playing good and playing good minutes, this is a much better team. But until then, we have to look at this group differently. So they're kind of in a way, a potential sleeping giant, but you wonder how many of those issues are more like long-term big picture, like Kawhi will continue to have these troubles. And that's really their challenge this year.
I think Covington's out of the rotation now, right?
That's crazy.
It does seem crazy. I've just seen like some, I've even seen some of the Clippers people I follow talking about that. And it's wild.
You know why? Because yeah. He is an analytics darling.
I don't know.
There we go. Bingo card. Yeah, that's the truth. I haven't watched as much of them this year. So that's an interesting one to dig into. I just assumed with him being like 12th in minutes or something like that, that it was an injury thing. But all right. So Roko's one that I was anticipating being a bigger part of the rotation. He's currently 11th in minutes. He hasn't played a whole lot. It sounds like he hasn't been playing particularly well. If Kawhi's injury situation is a, you know, ongoing long-term thing and Covington's out of the picture, that changes the way I look at this team. I think they have a lower ceiling. I would anticipate they're going to be more active from a trade standpoint, but if they're not, I mean, as of right now, we got to look at how they've played so far, and I wouldn't say it's been anything title contender worthy. So they've got a lot to figure out, but I think similar to Miami, similar potentially to Brooklyn, if the pieces do click together, this team does have potential upside. So they're not there yet. But if they put some pieces together, I guess Minnesota potentially as well. These are all maybe sleeping giants, but we've got to see them do it first at this point.
So I was just going to mention that our preseason projections only had the Clippers at the LeBron ones had them at 40 wins. So I think it's kind of interesting where like, and Taylor, if you remember the pod we did with Kostya and Kevin, we all had the Clippers as a bet the under team. And so far, interestingly, like their record's actually pretty decent, but they have a poor net rating. And I don't think their strength of schedule has been that difficult. They have one of the easiest strength of schedules in the league. So they're fifth easiest.
All right. Well, that wraps up the bottom half of the league. We're still in like the middle of tier four. So this tier has been Minnesota, Portland, Miami, Brooklyn, Clippers. The next team we're going to talk about is the Atlanta Hawks. They're going to finish it up for this tier. And I had them a little bit higher than you guys did because Trae Young has not shot the ball well. and he has been one of the most dynamic, effective offensive players the last few seasons. I think he's a top 15 guy, so I'm not really worried about that. They make a big trade in the offseason with the Spurs. I liked that trade. I'm blanking. DeJounte Murray, I was blanking on the name. They're figuring out how those two guys are going to work together. They have all season to do it. The previous version of this team had a lot of wings that could shoot. They had Bogdan. Okay, they have him. They had Herter. They had Gallinari. Where the iteration of this team a few years ago just had like a ton of wings that could shoot, but like they didn't really defend. They didn't bring a whole lot else to the table. Herter, obviously, they traded him. He's playing great on the Kings. Gallo's on the Celtics now. So they've kind of revamped their team. Their team's a little bit different, but I still think they're probably an additional trade away to maybe making everything make sense, maybe optimizing. But yeah, I like Atlanta. I like that they have two high level players on the team, but, yeah, I think this is going to be a work in progress kind of throughout the season.
I was going to say, I'd say that's fair. I like the top two guys. I don't like what's around them. And Trae Young is also not shooting the ball well from deep, which is a big piece of his game. He's also not finishing well at the rim. He has a D+ rim shot making grade right now. He's an F3-point shot making grade right now. And his quality on these attempts isn't particularly good either. So he's still acting as a very good playmaker. He's a horrific defender and he's not shooting well. And that really kind of kneecaps what he's able to bring you. So I'm not liking what I'm seeing from this team. I like those two guys, but the rest of the group isn't there and Trey's not in good form right now. So this isn't as dangerous of a team as I was anticipating they might be heading into the year.
Yeah. So the stat I just wanted to mention was they're actually benefiting a lot from opponent 3-point percentage luck. So I would actually expect their defense to regress a bit. And that's kind of been the better side of the ball, if I'm not mistaken.
Have you guys seen Okongwu play? I've heard a lot of people talk about him on Twitter, but I actually haven't gotten a chance to watch him yet.
He finishes well at the rim. I think there are like smaller technique things he has to improve upon. He's not a passer. He's not a spacer. He's a roll and cut big, anchor big kind of combo guy. And the him versus Capella discussion is one that, like, in the data, I've been like, it looks like he's ready for that leap. But Atlanta fans who are paying closer attention to some of those granular details haven't quite been as bought in. So I can't say I've paid super close attention, but that's definitely an ongoing conversation from what I can tell.
All right. We ready to move on to Indiana at 14?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, so Indiana is a team I actually had much higher. I had them in the top 10. I had them 9th. Krishna had them down at 19th, and Tim had them at 15th. So we were all over the board. I think this is the biggest disagreement we've had really in all of the rankings. And for me, I just feel like they're playing really well. Halliburton is a guy I've really doubted. That rim shot creation worried me, but he is playing out of his mind. The playmaking this year and especially lately has just been unreal. Turner's been playing well. Heald has been playing well. It looks like they have a future rookie of the year on their team. All signs are a go. Everything looks good for Indy. Tim, what are you seeing?
I think, well, Heald and Turner they've had some down games recently. I like the Jalen Smith addition for this group. Nesmith has given them some good minutes. McConnell does his thing. Nembhard does his thing. Like, they've got some interesting players. Halliburton's on a crazy streak right now. I don't know if he's continuing it of like a bunch of assists of like no turnover.
Literally
somehow.
Not turning the ball over for like a week and a half.
Yeah. Like, this team's overperforming right now. And I still think at some point they're going to end up doing a trade. I think there are enough teams that would potentially be interested in Turner and he wants a bunch of money. And if, you know, as we get later into the year, I think these guys are going to regress a little bit. And I think they're going to start thinking and make a move to move Turner rather than let him walk in free agency. So I see them potentially falling down a bit, but to this point so far, I think they've played well. I don't think I'm not as high as you on them, but I like a lot of the pieces. They've got a good group. Mathurin off the bench Once they have him starting, he'll be able to have even more of an impact, but they've done a really nice job with him. He's been really impressive. He was my preseason rookie of the year pick from a like value standpoint with the odds for him. And so far he's done nothing to make me doubt that. So I like five or six guys on this team. And then I have a lot of question marks about the others. And I think among those five or six guys, there are a couple of them that might be traded soon. So I guess that's where I am.
Yeah, I think actually an interesting stat, they are generating the fourth best shot quality on offense in the league, which is an interesting stat. I think like that's a good sign, at least. It's certainly good, but I'm kind of with Tim that like I just don't really expect them to kind of keep this level of play up. I had them lower, I think, partly because it feels like they've been playing a little worse recently. But outside of that, yeah, like I don't think Tim and I were that far. I think we kind of had similar thoughts on where we placed the Pacers. I had them four spots lower just because honestly, I had them in the same tier and I had a really tough time ranking the four team, the Pacers, the Clippers, the Blazers. Basically all of the teams that in this tier four, I had kind of difficulty ranking them. Although I'm looking now and it looks like we had them in tier three. So, and that's because of Taylor's ranking. So
I will say this was hard to do. I've certainly complained about a lot of people's power rankings before. I don't think I've ever made my own. And it definitely like the very top and the very bottom are pretty easy, but like in this like middle teens, you kind of get into the weeds with some of these teams. I actually think they should be buyers at the deadline. I feel like they're a piece away from being, you know, they're not going to go to a finals, but like dangerous. They could win a second round matchup. They could possibly win, or they could possibly challenge a team. It could do a lot for their confidence. It could speed up the rebuild. It could maybe make free agents or would be free agents maybe take a little bit less money, maybe be a little more excited about the future. Call me crazy, but I'd say maybe they add someone at the deadline and they could really be a team that you do not want to face in the first round.
I do think
that would be interesting.
Yeah. I don't think you're crazy, you know, to go in that direction. Like, I do think they could push for a play-in spot. It just, to me, the East just seems like if they were in the Western Conference, I think they should go all in and I would like actually try to push for the playoffs. But in the East, it feels like there's too many good teams for them to kind of compete with in terms of like making the playoffs. They're definitely going to compete for the play-in spot if they don't trade off their pieces.
Utah 13. They have been probably the surprise of the season. They've been playing free. They've been playing fun. Lauri Markkanen has had a huge breakout year. He's got to win most improved. Well, actually, he was like a pretty good player prior to this, but I would imagine he wins most improved player with the Riders. It seems like things are fun, and I've found myself clicking on Utah games a lot more than I ever thought I would. And I think they've regressed a little bit as of late because they started out so hot. But again, they're a dangerous team. They shoot the three. Their offense, it seems like, generates so many good looks. They have a lot of young players, a lot of energy. And just kind of generally, I think their rebuild has been sped up by a year or two because of the players they got back in trades. Because they have like six or seven like legit NBA guys on the team. What do you think, Tim?
They're an interesting, weird offensive group because they don't run pick and roll a whole lot. They don't post up much and they don't ISO much. They move the ball really well. There's a lot of off screen action. They, you know, hammer the boards. It's a lot of like drive and kick basketball with good spacing. Olynyk and Markkanen do good things for them in that regard. They're fun. They've really fallen back to earth recently. They're 3-7 in their last 10. And they've dropped from like first in the West to like seventh or something like that at this point. Seventh. I still think they're definitely overperforming expectations. I think still they've been good. I'm attempting to not anchor too much to how they started and try to capture the whole year. And based on that, I had them ranked 12th, which I still think is fair. You had them 11th. We were pretty close. Christian had them 14th. So I think we're all, you know, they're good. They're fun. They're going to be an interesting team to keep watching. They're not as good as they started the year off, but I'm with you, Taylor. They've really, you know, jump-started this rebuild a bit, and they're going to be another team like Indiana who's like, all right, do we buy? Do we sell? We have all these picks that we came into the year with based on the moves we made in the offseason. Do we try to add to that, or do we try to capitalize on that? Because they do have a number of pretty solid players together, and a lot of them aren't the youngest. So I can definitely see them, if they do continue to fall a bit, they could look to move maybe like Olynyk or Clarkson or some of these older guys that maybe aren't big picture, like on their timeline to compete standpoint. But Markkanen is a lot of fun. Beasley's fun. Sexton, THT is still, they're trying to rebuild with, you know, he's a bit of a project, but they've got Vanderbilt. Like there's some interesting players in this group for sure. Walker Kessler has been impressive as a rim protector. So they've got a lot going on, and I think they need to at some point in, I don't think they have to do it yet, but we're going to see them at some point need to make a decision as to, do we just keep doing this, or do we try to lean more into it, or do we lean away from it? Because you want to keep at a franchise level, keep taking steps forward. You don't want to, you know, have a fun year and then end up being worse next year. So they got to figure out what they want to do with themselves.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing with the Jazz is, so I was kind of looking at where their schedule is, and it's kind of middle of the pack. And Tim mentioned they're 3-7 in their last 10 games. And I was just kind of looking at the schedule, and they started the season off really well. And they actually beat a bunch of pretty good teams at the start of the season, where it felt like, okay, there could be something real here. I mean, they beat the Nuggets, they beat the Pelicans. Second one of the season was against the Wolves, who at the time we all thought would be much better. They beat the Grizzlies twice, though I'm not sure if Ja or Bane or Triple J were missing. Triple J was, I'm pretty sure. The other two might not have been. But they just started off the season really well with a lot of good wins. They also beat the Suns, had a 1-point loss to the Suns recently too. It's kind of a, like, the beginning of the season really looked like it could be something, but then last few games, they've got a loss to the Pistons, and they've kind of slowed down. So it's kind of interesting because the start of the season really did seem more real to me than, say, like Indiana or some of the other teams. But at the same time, we've kind of seen them regress back a bit more. And like Tim said, they got to kind of pick a direction, I guess, and go with it.
Another thing about the Jazz is they don't have a lot of defensive-oriented players on their team outside of Vanderbilt. Like, Kelly Olynyk is their starting center, where, like, for a whole season, that's tough. He has shot the ball extremely well from three, which has helped a lot, really, like, helped their spacing. But that could be difficult as things move forward. Interested to see if Mike Conley stays there or not, if he gets traded, because he's obviously the vet of the group, still offers some three-point shooting. So I'm kind of curious about that. Anybody got anything else before we move on?
Nope.
All right, we'll go to Dallas at 12. You guys both had Dallas as a top 10 team. I had them way lower at 16. I guess my thing with Dallas is they lost Jalen Brunson, which I think really hurt. I like his game a lot. He's obviously playing really well with the Knicks this year. Luka, a phenomenal, might win the MVP. But outside of Luka, I don't know. I don't understand how this team could be that good. I don't think maybe Dorian Finney-Smith top, like, sneaks in as like a top 75 player at the end, as like a pretty good 3-and-D guy. But outside of that, like, they have a lot of like solid players on their team, but they are, is it Josh Green who's a young player that's playing well, shooting guard?
Yeah, Josh Green.
He's a guy where that's a spark I'd look at, try to fan that, see if you can get development out of there, big impact, get big scoring out of him. But after that, it's just really tough. Where it's like, I don't know. Tim, what are your thoughts?
Luka's really good. Luka raises the tides. I'm interested in a second here to hear from Krishna on the shot quality for this team. But like looking at Luka's individual data, 100th percentile pick and roll ball handler, stable efficiency, 100th percentile post-up efficiency, 98th percentile ISO efficiency. And yes, I understand there is no real 100th percentile. It's really like 99.999 something that gets rounded. But he is kicking butt in all of those areas. His three-point shooting, he's shooting 33.1%, and he's still overperforming his shot quality. He's just taking like insanely difficult shots, but in a way that defenses are respecting those shots, and it's, you know, manipulating how teams defend him, which opens up numbers advantages for the Mavericks off ball, which with his playmaking as good as it is, first, I believe we have him in the league this year, 100th percentile for quality, 98th percentile for volume, 98th percentile for efficiency. Like, he is the offense, and he's shooting well at the rim. He's creating at the rim well, 98th percentile. Like, this dude's just been a monster offensively. And I think that enables him to raise the shot quality and kind of spoon feed some of these guys on the team that, you know, if you're just looking at them, you're like, ah, that guy's not all that good. That guy, I have questions about. When they're getting, you know, high caliber, like expected efficiency, even if they underperform it a little bit, it's still good offense. So I think he's really like, there's a lot of stress on him and what he's doing. Dinwiddie's able to proxy some of that, certainly not to the same level, but the two of them, you know, would bring something. Dorian Finney-Smith is a solid defender. Hardaway has some shooting that he brings to the table. Bullock gives you some 3-and-D. Like, there are some guys on this team, and then you've got like Kleba and others that will convert decent, like convert okay on really high shot quality. Altogether, it's resulted in terms of like what they've actually done so far. They've been a pretty solid team, and that's why I had them ranked 10th for me this year.
Yeah, so I think Taylor, I don't actually know that I disagree with anything you said, but I think kind of digging into the data a bit more, I was impressed with their shot quality stats. So they're eighth in offensive team shot quality, and surprisingly even higher on defense, third in defensive shot quality. So that's forcing opposing teams into bad shots. So they somehow have a good defense that maybe in the playoffs doesn't quite translate. I think, like, you know, if you saw that Warriors series, they definitely do not have a great playoff defense. But from what I've heard, like, Luka's playing, you know, what I've seen, Luka seems to be playing much better defense. You can, like, at the end of that Warriors game, he got a number of stops there. And so he's seemed to make a real commitment on that end. And, you know, they had a good defense last year as well. I still don't necessarily buy into it in the playoffs. And like you, Taylor, I'm just like, they need a kind of a secondary ball handler for the playoffs. But I think what they've shown so far, I really like they've been pretty good. They have a good net rating. Although they've had some wild results, I think they've lost. Yesterday they lost to the Pistons, which so you guys did the rankings yesterday, and I did them today. And with the benefit of knowing that they lost to the Pistons, I might have had them down a spot or two from maybe where Tim had them. Oh no, actually I had them higher than Tim, so maybe not. Yeah.
Can I bring up a Luka stat?
Yeah, sure.
So he's moved out of a low activity defensive role from last year. He's now into a helper role this year, which is important for this team because they run a lot of mobile coverages defensively. They're not in drop. They're not, you know, they're not playing ball screens 2v2. They're putting two guys on the ball, stopping you from getting to the rim more proactively and then needing to rotate behind it. So Luka and others rotating is going to be really important. And we've seen him take a huge step up with his defensive playmaking. He went from last year a C minus pickpocket rating and a B minus passing lane defense rating. This year he's got an A minus and an A for those two stats. He's been, if you just look at steals altogether, 97th percentile, A plus grade. So he is conserving himself still. He's barely moving on defense. Big picture, second percentile in our database. while being really, I guess, efficient in terms of his like event creation as a defender when he is deciding to move. So that to me was a really interesting nugget that, you know, he's also been active on the boards a good bit. Like there are some weird things that he's adding that I don't think we've traditionally seen him be differentiating in. And, you know, even little improvements like that, I think can really help his defensive value and then help the team. Cause this is another team that doesn't have like a towering rim protector. It's gotta be team defense. It has to be rotating and recovering, and their leader offensively being able to contribute to that defensively and not just be hidden, I think really, really helps the defense. Anytime you're just trying to hide somebody, it's going to hurt your ability to perform as a team. So them not needing to hide him, I think, has been really helpful.
Yeah, I think one other thing is Christian Wood. He was brought in kind of as an X factor, and he's played well. He's averaging 17 points a game on 111 true shooting, which is great. 40% from three on 3.5 attempts a game. Really great percentage from 2-point land as well. So he definitely brings some scoring impact. But it's hard when you're trying to cobble together. Like Luka, unbelievable, fantastic. Like unreal stuff. But after that, it's just hard when you're, I don't know. I think this team has probably a ton of players inside the top 150, which sounds like a weird thing to say, but like they're two through seven or eight are good and solid, but not a lot of like big difference makers there. So I think there's like a huge floor built into this team. And there's enough players around Luka that are like NBA caliber where like if you give them the high shot quality, like the team overall is going to have success. But they just need, I mean, maybe Christian Wood has a one-off the crazier. He's bounced around the league a lot. He's always been a really talented guy. But it's just hard for me to see them in that really upper echelon because it's just so much Luka and he is wonderful. Also, I don't know, I talked about this a little while ago where if things go really south for the Lakers, I feel like they should just go all in on an AD trade. I feel like that would be something that would put this team over the top. That would be like a crazy, crazy thing to happen. But
they won't do that.
In terms of just like,
I'll tell you right now, they won't do that.
How what's that?
That's a dead on arrival. That won't happen.
How come?
They, from their perspective, they're not going to blow it up and try to rebuild like that. They're going to keep him around. They see him as
the Lakers,
a long term piece for them. Yeah.
Oh god, I thought you were saying Dallas. I was like, why? No, that's just kind of like crazy in like the infinite amount of timelines. There's one where that happens and it's nuts. And it's fun.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna say, I think I kind of agree with you with the Mavs, where I do think they have like Dorian Finney-Smith's a quality, good 3-and-D player, right? And Kleba's really good. Like they do have a lot of really solid NBA players, especially in like kind of in that middle range. But like if you were doing like a ranking of like top 20 players or something, or top, you know, whatever, like you wouldn't they don't have that second, like kind of like the second top 20 or top 20 or whatever, right? Like, so I don't disagree with you there, but I do think they have a lot of underrated depth. Am I wrong on that?
No, I totally agree.
Yeah, like it feels like you mentioned, they have a lot of good NBA players and they're generating really good shots. And I think the thing that's amazing to me is I still don't really understand how they have a good defense. Like they had a good defense last year and they have a pretty decent one this year. Well, Luka's playing better defense, so I think that's definitely contributing to it. But
Yeah, I can speak to that. It's scheme and it's good team defensive rotations. Jason Kidd's done a really good job with that. Yeah. I'll say this, the more I saw from Frank Vogel's staff after Kidd left and the more I saw from Dallas, the more I'm convinced he was a big, big driver when it came to their ability to make the most of their roster. They've been really, I think, just really smart about optimizing the group.
Yeah, because I think we saw in the playoffs, they kind of, you did see Golden State just annihilate their defense essentially in the Western Conference Finals, and the Suns kind of really did in the first half of that series. So I think like Taylor, I don't really necessarily buy into them as like going very far in the playoffs. To be honest, I kind of wouldn't be surprised if they lose in the first round. But like what they've shown so far, I think they've been pretty good. And I think, I mean, Kidd's just been a pretty good coach, it seems like.
I think they're locked into the second round just because the floor they have in Luka is just so good. But after that, it does get really tough. Let's move on. Let's go to Golden State at 11. They obviously coming off a championship. It's been, I think, a surprise for a lot of people. They obviously have a lot of really good high-end players, but their bench has been a huge issue this year. Tim, what are your thoughts on Golden State's ranking at 11?
They've played well. I don't have any big notes on like current form or major injuries or things like that. Their big change, I think, has been rotationally, and that I think might be why Krishna has them a bit higher than you and I do. We have them at 14th. He has them at 7th. They've been playing better since they've moved away from James Wiseman, who's an interesting physical prospect, obviously high draft capital. He looks like he should be a solid NBA big, but he hasn't quite put it together yet. So I think challenges around like saying like this should be someone that we can play and play well with. He was in more in the rotation earlier in the year, now not as much, and we've seen a boost in performance since then. I also want to shout out Steph Curry, who went from, he had a down year last year when it came to his ability to finish at the rim, C+ rim shot making. That has skyrocketed back up to a 96th percentile A+ this year. That's been the big, I guess, change in his game that I see offensively from a data standpoint. He's still creating similar rim pressure. He's still really good as a three-point shooter, obviously. His playmaking is still quite high. It grades out a little bit lower this year than it did last year, but that ability to finish once he's at the rim, and he's also been pretty solid in the mid-range game as well, has been a nice boost that, you know, makes a guy who's already absolutely devastating even more dangerous.
Yeah, his mid-range field goal percentages have been pretty wild too. We're gonna get our pull-up shooting up at some point, so I'll kind of be interested to see where he is there. But I would imagine he'll be at the very top on that end, in the mid-range even too, just because he's I think he's shooting like 60% or something on the short mid-range or something crazy. So we actually have a stable, short, stable mid-range field goal percentage. He's third in the league right now behind Durant and Fox. And on long twos, he's a little bit lower. Yeah, he's wow. Okay, I'm not going to find him. He's outside of the top 25 on long twos, but I think it's probably honestly likely due to him not shooting as many. He's been really good in that kind of more floater range, I think. And then he also leads the league in win probability added, which if you're looking for MVP race, you could argue something like that is important just because, like, you know, and most valuable aspect. But outside of that, so regarding Golden State, I think, yeah, like they've been much better since Wiseman went out. But I think I went too high with them on my ranking, honestly. Because I was kind of, again, so basically with Golden State, I did the same thing I did with Miami, where I was kind of looking at where I think they're going to end up. The interesting thing with Golden State is I do think I would lower them in terms of like preseason expectations. Like I think preseason expectations, the top tier, at least by Vegas, was considered Boston, Golden State, and Milwaukee. Our projections were actually a little lower on Golden State. I think actually a lot of analytical model projections were lower on Golden State, and they've kind of mostly been more right about them. But just given what we've seen of them so far, I don't think you can put them in that Milwaukee, Boston tier. And I think I would actually like lower their overall ceiling just because the bench is a major question mark. And I think they are probably going to have to make a move, to be honest, but unless Anthony Lamb is actually a decent piece, which I'm a little skeptical of.
Yeah, they have depth concerns. One more Steph thing that we have with our stable play type efficiencies, there are five that are like guard or wing play types in the half court. And his percentiles for those are 100, 100, 100, 99, 95. Just stupid, stupid efficiency. I tweeted out a picture of that report card. Go check it out on Twitter if you want to see how insane he is with some of these things. But like, man, they're going to be like Chris was saying, like there are roster concerns with this group, but like they're still so scary to play with what Steph can do to you. So that's certainly, you know, there's danger to them, and Clay's looking better recently than he did to start the year as well. So that also helps.
His 3-point shot making grade, I think, shot up, right? Do we have that updated?
Yeah, we've been updated. Yeah, it shot up a bunch for Clay. For Steph, it looks like it's lower than it was last year, but I think part of that the stabilization's like holding him down a little bit. Yeah. Over time, it's just going to continue to rise. But like the results are currently there. It's just that the math makes you prove it a little bit more with more volume, right, which and he will certainly get up.
Yeah. I do think in the playoffs, like, you know, if they get a good seed, they have their starting five net rating has been really, really good. So if they're like, you know, if they get a decent seed in the playoffs, you definitely don't want to see them in the playoffs just because you can play your starters more. And their starting five has just been really good. But what are you guys worried with Jordan Poole? It's been a little up and down for him. He's getting called for a lot of travels. I think I have to look this up, but I feel like he's getting called for 2 or 3 a game.
Well, it's because he keeps traveling.
Wow. Yeah. He stop breaking the rules, Jordan Poole.
They could call him for a few more carries too. I'm not worried about Jordan Poole. I feel like the biggest things about this team are Clay had the slow start, and then he was like, yo, Charles Barkley, give me some time. Then he got red hot, had that 40-point game. He seems like he's playing a lot better. The two biggest things we talked about earlier, they lost Gary Payton II going to the Blazers. He was, again, all defense for a guard, which is super valuable. And then Otto Porter Jr. left in free agency. He went to Toronto, and he provided really good rebounding, really good lineup flexibility where you could play him at the four, could shoot the three some. He was a really, really good glue guy for them, had a little edge to him, a little old band game. And I feel like just missing those two bench players and replacing them with like really poor impact has just, it's just really hard in the regular season to not have a functional bench.
Oh God.
Yeah,
Jordan Poole's data is not good. Oh,
Jordan Poole.
3-point shot making. And from we don't have LeBron up, but the other impact metrics do not like his performance so far. That is, he's really falling.
I'm just going to mention his, so we have his stable travels per 75. He's actually fifth highest. The other four ahead of him are interesting.
Name them all.
Is JaVale McGee one of them?
No. Okay. So number one is Ja. Mm. Number two is OG. Number three is Marjon Beauchamp. Did I say that right?
That is. Is that a basketball player?
On the Bucks. Sure. He's a rookie.
I don't know how to say his name.
Number four is Jaylen Brown, and then Poole.
Hey, do we have stable carries?
Oh.
Maybe? Probably?
No, I don't think so. So carries are, I believe, are included in travels. Hmm. No, are they?
We don't have that stuff, though.
Well, we don't have it, though.
All right, we're going to cut it off there. That gets us through Team 20 to Team 11. That was the middle third of our first ever Basketball Index Power Rankings. Join us for Part 3. It's going to be coming out tomorrow, and Part 3 is going to have the top 10 teams counting down to number one. For Krishna, Tim, my name is Taylor, and thanks for listening to the Basketball Index Podcast.